2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Welcome to the Daily Dispatch Cross-Pollination Podcast, brought to you by those good folks over at DFSArmor.com. Hey, if you like what you hear on today's podcast and you're not signed up with us yet, make sure you do so. Go to DFSArmor.com, use the promo code PODCAST, and then select one of the brilliant packages that we got out there. We've got a monthly and a yearly thing going on right now. If you got commitment issues like I do myself, the monthly will certainly be for you. But if you have been signed up with us for a couple months now and you want to make sure you lock in your place with us long term, the yearly is certainly a great way to do so. Once again, DFSArmor.com. Use the promo code PODCAST when you use either of those packages. I'm your host, Al Walsh. 14A.Walsh is where you find me on Twitter. Keith Hall joining me as always. You find him on Twitter at BoomersDFSDaddy. So I'm very glad we got somewhat of a small baseball slate today. Three-game NBA slate that we'll dive into in a little bit. But we've also got the NBA draft coming up this week. Kind of snuck NFL. Up on us there, but it is here. What did I say, NBA?
NBA.
Well, they're going to do a pre-draft before the draft. I kid my folks. We just had the schedule release on Thursday. But, yes, of course, the NFL draft, definitely not the NBA one.
Yeah, it's kind of snuck up on us. We've got stupidity going on with first-round picks out of Florida. We've got stupidity going on with Warren Sapp and the Browns and, Adam Schefter and all this good stuff. So it's going to be interesting to see. If I ever am a guy that has the number one pick, I'll never be a GM of an NFL team, so I'll never have to worry about it. But if my team ever did have the number one overall pick,
I really hope the Cowboys do fall down that low.
They never will. They'll get close, but I don't ever see them being the worst team in football. Now, they might get it because of trade. That would be nice.
Right.
But I don't ever see them having the, record.
We can all pray, though.
No, we cannot. I guess we could, but we're not praying for that. That's for damn sure. I would want them to trade out of it and get more picks, and with the track record that the Browns have had, I understand that they're gun shy. I understand exactly what the coach in Cleveland wants. He wants Myles Garrett, and I can kind of see exactly what Warren Sapp is saying with, him taking plays off and stuff. Look, you want the number one overall draft pick to be an absolute completely balls-ass dominant player. The problem with that is there's not really one of those coming into the NFL this year. So he's kind of just, what's left.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's interesting, too, because if the Browns were to do something like that, they probably wouldn't get, the same kind of haul that, say, like an RG3 would have gotten over the last couple of years. It'll probably be something a lot smaller if that's the way to go. But you're absolutely right. Not really anyone worthy of that number one pick. Garrett, kind of a physical freak, but we have heard things about him. He's not exactly the most football savvy. He is physically dominant, but he does take plays off. That's all good and well. I really haven't watched the guy all that much. But again, for a team, like the Patriots, right? So if the Browns wanted to get Jimmy Garoppolo in some way, maybe, the number one pick is in play there. The Patriots probably wouldn't take a guy like Garrett. They'd probably take a guy, somebody that would fit more of their scheme or something like that. But, it's certainly something that we're going to watch over, the next couple of days. We do know that this week gets really hectic on, places like Pro Football Talk and, Twitter's got all sorts of rumors flying out there. So that'll be really neat to watch that and see how that goes. But, you know, you bring up the whole issue of the number one. Well, my team just had the number one pick a couple years ago where my Buccaneers got Jameis Winston. But that was more of a situation where we needed that franchise quarterback. And, you know, I don't think trading that number one pick was ever an option. It was either going to be Winston or Mariota. I still think we made the right play there with Winston. So just a lot of waiting and seeing going on. NBA playoffs this weekend were absolutely great. I guess the most notable thing going on there, the Celtics finally got it back to 2-2. So we've got ourselves a series now, or I don't know, maybe we don't now because it seems like the Bulls without Rondo are just, you know,
that's why they
were the eighth seed. But I thought that was pretty cool to see Boston climb back into it. And I don't know, anything that really stood out to you over the weekend?
The fact that we don't have basketball IQ savvy people playing for the Oklahoma City Thunder outside of Steven Adams.
Or the Rockets,
outside of Steven Adams, Andre Robertson, and, Russell Westbrook. So, Jeremy Grant, if you don't learn how to foul with authority, I'm sorry, you can't be on the court.
He did have a great game.
Oh, bullcrap. I don't care. One great game. He should have knocked Nene to the damn floor. There is no way when you are freaking fighting back that you let Nene get an and one to put you up two possessions. Not after you just made you just pulled off the shit that you did. I mean, Steven Adams looked back at Russell Westbrook and said, I'm missing this on purpose. Gets the rebound, executes it, throws it back to Westbrook, who drains like 35-footer, and then the refs don't call the push-off on James Harden, which yeah, I have to
was,
say...
That was a blatant it was blatant, push-off.
But that was not the only time. Harden does that shit all the time. He'll come and he'll just randomly push a guy. And how he doesn't get that call... But I'm not even mad about that because I understand, hey, he's James Harden. He's going to get the benefit of the doubt. Blah, 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 blah. But Jeremy Grant, how you do not go up and wrap up Nene? And how we don't foul in the backcourt somewhere?
I thought it was kind of bizarre. I thought that play that you're talking about with Jeremy Grant and Nene there at the end, I thought he was just going to let him go. Like, I mean, when I saw him
if
go
you're
up
not
for the
gonna,
dunk,
exactly.
It's like, all right, well, it's still a 3-point game. All right. Nope.
Exactly. You do one or the other. You don't let him get the and one to make it a 2-possession game.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as that happened, I turned it back to the Rockies game. Like, I knew that we were done, you know, and that was horrible. That was absolutely horrible.
The one play that gets overshadowed in that whole thing is when you guys were down four and Steven Adams intentionally misses the free throw and then kicks it back out to Russell. I'm just saying that was one of the more spectacular plays.
Executed, like, intentional free throw misses that I've ever seen. Like,
it's fantastic.
He called his shot, basically. He turned around right around to Russ before – And see, this only works if he makes the first one, you know. And who was it? Who's the former coach of the Warriors that was sitting there?
Mark Jackson.
Mark Jackson says, if I'm Steven Adams, I make this free throw. Well, why? We didn't have any timeouts left. You can't – what are you supposed to do, make it and then play defense and foul? No, because – whatever. He turned around, called his shot. And it was spectacular. Like, that is...
It was real, and it was spectacular.
That was... Because I'm sitting here going, you know, there's like a 5% chance that we execute this because we always find a way to screw things up when it comes down to... And not only was it a great play on Steven Adams' part, to call it, execute it, and then turn around and then know where Russ was going to be, but for Russ to be able to step into that and hit it,
Impressive.
Yeah, it was. So, but...
All right, well, I'll go ahead.
I was going to say, but, you know, that series is over tomorrow night, so I'm not really worried about it.
let us talk about tonight's games. We've got three on the docket. And I just want to say, by the way, all of my first round predictions, which you can find in the NBA section of DFSArmy.com, they're all looking fantastic right now. Okay, so I had, I just want to run it down real quick. Celtics I had in seven. Okay, Pace, I believe Cavs I had in five. With, you know, whatever, one game, no big deal. And then I had the Bucks in six, which, you know, we'll...
That could be up in the air.
We'll get that tonight. And then I had Wizards in seven over the Hawks. And then on the west side of things, I had the Warriors in four. I had the Clippers in seven. Was the third. I had the Rockets in five. And then I had... and then I had the Spurs in six, all of which are still, like, completely viable. So... I'm very proud of myself with doing all that. So, with that being said, let's talk about the Bucks at the Raptors tonight. Series is tied at two. This is, you know, obviously it's a playoff game, so it's crucial. But this should go a long way in determining the winner of this series tonight. You know, Toronto is going to have that rocking crowd going, but hey, Giannis, he's shown plenty of times throughout his NBA career already that kind of thing just amps him up. Who's going to get the best of who tonight, and who's going to do it?
I don't know about you, but I don't see any way that Toronto doesn't win tonight.
Okay.
With
my series prediction, obviously, you know where I'm leaning.
Yeah, and it has nothing to do, it really honestly has nothing to do with that. It's more of, like, they looked really good the last game.
Yeah.
They were finally moving the ball around. It wasn't, you know... They were finally kind of clicking a little bit on offense, and it looked like they were actually, you know, they gave a flip on defense. I don't mind some of the Milwaukee players here. Greg Monroe's had a pretty good series. Giannis has been, you know, he's been Giannis at times, and then he's kind of just been a mediocre player at times. Chris Middleton's actually had a pretty good series as well, from a fantasy standpoint. I mean, as long as he continues to be a little bit cheaper, then I don't mind continuing to go to him. So,
yeah, you know, it was interesting where the Raptors switched up the starting lineup throughout the series, you know, at some point during the series, and then they end up
before the last game.
Yep, with Norman Powell in place of Jonas Valanciunas. I feel for Valanciunas because he's got the talent to be a stud, but there's just times where he just checks out mentally.
I think it's in this matchup that he's not. I honestly think it's just the matchup right now. Like, okay. I'm surprised that more coaches don't do this, you know, more often. Coming out of the gate, as far as in the starting lineups, you know, play the matchups, because you're talking about, like, what, the first 4 or 5 minutes of the game, they can be pretty crucial. Yeah. And there you find a lot of coaches that'll just, you know, oh, this is my starting five, and, you know, I'm going to start them no matter what, because if we play what we play, then, you know, we're good to go. Well, that's not always how it works. And yeah, Jonas has the possibilities, but I mean, when you've got an unpredictable coach on the other end and Jason Kidd, I'm sorry, I've got to go with what gives me the best chance to win. And right now, Norman Powell gives me the best. And it's crazy to say that, but Norman Powell gives me the best chance to win coming right out of the gate.
Well, you and I, we've been Norman Powell fans for over a year now. We're talking about the calendars that have been thrown away already. That's when we were Norman Powell fans. And, you know, there were some times where he won us the money throughout the season, and, you know, great to see him back. And he's certainly a viable option there, being cheap, sort of just like we saw with Gerald Green for the Celtics over the last two games, where Brad Stevens made a great coaching decision, in my opinion, just because Amir Johnson was kind of getting swallowed up down there. So, I like seeing coaches make these savvy moves, kind of some that some people would be like, what? But yes, all in all, they ended up working out fantastic. And the big thing here for the Raptors, they don't have the added motivation of the Bucks. What are they? The Bradley Center. They don't have the added motivation of those guys playing the Barney theme song during their player introduction. So
yeah, no kidding.
By the way, it was funny the first time, but you can't do that to it. Like, you're just
hey, if it works, don't break it. It worked.
Yeah, so, not the second time around, though.
Yeah, I know. So we're, what, 1-1 on it? Yeah. Yeah, you've got to find another way to troll them if this game comes back to Milwaukee. Figure out a different song other than the, you know, and go away from the normal, you know, Dark Side Star Wars, you know, Imperial Death March theme. you know, go to something else. You know, I liked the ultimate trolling of the Barney theme song, but, you know, get something else in there, you know, mix it up a little bit, but, you know, if it works, don't break it. So.
Dude. All right. Anything else from that game? Moving on.
Yeah, moving on.
All right. We got the Washington Wizards and the Atlanta Hawks in this one. 2-1 series lead for the Wizards. In that playoff preview write-up that I did, I felt that the home team would win each game in this series, and I still don't see anything with that changing. I know the Wizards had a nice run over, you know, the course of the season on the road, particularly out on the West Coast, but I do think that they're much better suited for the home Verizon Center during these playoffs. By the way, big up to the Washington Capitals. They also made it to the second round last night, so that city's a buzz. But Atlanta favored by 2.5 in this game. Again, I don't really see much changing. This matchup between Paul Millsap and Markieff Morris just takes a fantastic turn with each game that goes. But I don't know.
And by fantastic, you mean for fantastic in the Paul Millsap era?
Yeah, as a fan, to watch it all go down, I think it's hysterical, and then to hear him post game. But what in particular are you looking for here tonight?
I expect either Markieff Morris to foul out by the end of the third quarter, get double teed and get thrown out, or get a flagrant two and get thrown out. I mean, and the only reason I say that is we know Markieff has a little bit of a temper. And if I'm getting absolutely just completely dominated, and I've got the temper of Markieff Morris, I've got to do something to send a message. And I'm not talking about dirty basketball. Don't think that I am, but I'm talking like if Paul Millsap is absolutely just schooling me, I've got to send a message that, hey, you might school me, but you're going to take a beating doing it. And I advocate good, hard playoff basketball. And that's what I'm looking for in Markieff Morris. I also think that, Jason Smith is a little bit interesting tonight. If this continues, I know that, Smith has gotten a little bit more run. If I'm not mistaken, I haven't completely watched all the games, but I know that Jason Smith, you know, has been talked about, and I think he could be kind of a sneaky little play tonight, because there's no way that Scott Brooks can continue to let Markieff Morris just get absolutely just dominated down low. So, I mean, it changes the whole complexion of the game.
Sure does. You know? Now we're talking about, you know, personal matchups. We even saw John Wall, Dennis Schroeder get into it a couple times. I dig it. You got both these teams there down the same division, Eastern Conference. They've seen each other plenty of times. And, you know, if all goes according to plan, they'll have played each other 11 times throughout the course of this season. So this could certainly reach the boiling point sooner or later. I like the Hawks in a close game tonight. And, you know, Dwight Howard, he's had some decent games here, but I would look for him to completely just dominate down low tonight. So
yeah, I look for that happening.
Okay. Last game of the night, we got the Warriors at the Portland Trailblazers. Warriors 7.5-point favorites in this one, -340 on the money line, biggest spread favorite, biggest money line favorite, all that jazz, 219 total, also biggest of the night. The whole thing with Steve Kerr, not being on the sidelines, hasn't really fazed.
He might not be on the sideline the rest of the playoffs, they've said.
Yes, huge story. But again, you know, they've got a coach in Mike Brown who's, you know, dealt with superstars.
Not as good.
James. But, you know, again, they've shown too, even with Luke Walton last season, they were able to win, you know, how many ever games in a row. I think.
Okay, are we really going to sit here and compare the mental capacity of a Luke Walton versus a Mike Brown?
I don't have to compare it, but I think these guys have been through enough themselves that I don't think it's going to be a huge deal.
I think it is a huge deal.
Okay. Explain yourself.
And the reason is because, you know, different coaches have different feels, and you've got different feels for rotations. Yes, I understand they're on the same staff, but it's not like Mike Brown has, you know, Steve Kerr in his ear on IBF headset or whatever it is, where they just stick the little thing transmitter in your ear, and he's like, call a timeout now. You know, sub in Curry now. You know, give him a call now. Call this play now. It's not like Steve Kerr's running the bench from Skype or anything. Although that would impressive. that would be impressive. maybe we should do that. but you know, different feel. You've got different rotations. Different. I mean, it might not be the make or break in this series, but I think if Steve Kerr ends up missing the playoffs, like we're talking the rest of the playoffs, I think it's going to end up being a big deal. This is a team. We all talk about, you know, the Warriors can basically run themselves and do this and do that and do this. Well, yeah, that's fine. But you've got to. Are you telling me that Draymond Green doesn't have has the same amount of respect for Mike Brown that he does for Steve Kerr? Wrong. I'm sorry.
I don't know. To be quite honest with you,
same amount. We're talking about a guy that's been with the Warriors for four years.
We're talking about
the head coach of the Warriors for the last 3 years rather than somebody that's been on the bench for the last game. Year.
We're talking about the actual game. Who cares who respects who more, right? Like Draymond.
Because I need my coach to be able to control him. Well, I understand that, but I need my coach to be able to reel in Draymond. Because there's times where he can just get outrageously out of control.
Sure.
And we're talking about.
Kerr does a good job of reeling him in.
I think he does at times. But what I'm saying is we're talking about the head coach of the Warriors for the last 3 years rather than a guy that's been on the bench for only 1 year. So that's what I'm talking about. You know, with Luke Walton is a little bit different because he'd been on the bench since Steve Kerr came in. You know, that was his. That was his right-hand man since the time he took over. It's not the same with Mike Brown.
Yeah, but they still have other guys on that staff that have been there.
Jason Williams? Whoever that guy is?
The guy that's got the finely trimmed beard. He's got the salt and pepper hair. I don't know his name, but we all know who we're talking about. But still, this whole, you know, most of these guys in the unit, you know, we're talking about Curry, Clay, Dre, Iggy, guys like that, like, you know, I feel like they'll be able to police themselves. And look, if we really want to break it down to a nanosphere, Dre kind of runs this whole team the way.
Right, and I'm not saying that it's going to come into effect this game. You know what I mean?
I don't even next series. Like, sure, I think, maybe the Western Conference Finals and the finals, but
yeah, I think, like I said, I think the deeper they go into the playoffs, it could definitely come into play. And I think it's going to end up being a bigger story the farther they go. Because, I mean, we don't expect – Portland's down 3-1. Their chance to get back in the series – and they might win tonight. Who knows?
3-0.
What did I say?
3-0.
Yeah, that's what they are.
No, you said 3-1.
Oh, okay. Portland's down 3-0. The chance for them to go up or to, you know, get back in the series to make it competitive was the other night when they had a huge lead and they let it squander again. They might win tonight, but they're pretty much done for this series. Let's just go ahead and say what it and call it
how
it is.
I already did, yeah.
But, you know, I don't expect to see Durant tonight. There's no need to put him into risk. The only thing that I can think of, even if he does play, I don't think he's in play as far as fantasy is concerned, because I don't think that he plays with the intent of going out there to try to dominate. I think he plays just to get kind of back into the groove of the rotation and everything like that. But everybody else, the other big three, I think they're all in play. I also think that, you know, your guards for Portland are in play. I think that if Nurkic is out, which I commend him for trying to battle through that the other night, but he did not look healthy at all. I think Al-Farouq Aminu is in play. I like a lot from this game. It's just whether or not, you know, as being from a selfish standpoint, I really want Portland to win tonight because I want to be able to play these guys as long as possible. because I mean, I love it, but I don't see it really, really, really happening.
Yeah. Again, if we're talking about just powering up and down the court, I'm sure we're going to see that tonight. Continue to play all these role players there for the Blazers. I think they'll be fine. All your main guys for the Warriors. Again, this is the best pace game that we're going to see. The most shots, least deeps, everything. So,
Do you think Curry actually fixes his shooting woes tonight? He hasn't shot well this series.
I'm not even terribly worried about it, to be quite honest, because
from a fantasy standpoint, dude. Not from a win. They don't need him to shoot well in order for them to win.
I mean, look, when we're talking about fantasy wise, I really haven't liked using Curry pretty much all season as it's been. You know, I mean, look, we got John Wall and we got Damian Lillard who fill up the stat sheet a lot more. So. Yeah, I guess in a roundabout way, I'm not even worried about it from that angle because I probably wasn't going to play him anyway.
Okay, so if we're ranking the Warriors as far as the four, I guess you could even
Dre, Durant, Clay.
Not without Durant. Iggy or McCaw. Dre, Clay, Curry.
Yeah.
Okay, I would even put probably maybe not from a raw fantasy point. Standout, I would probably put Iggy above Curry.
Dollar per point?
Yeah, dollar per point. If Durant is out. What's that?
I said my favorite column in the industry.
Yeah, if Durant is out. So.
Yeah, certainly. And Iggy, last, just say, 29 field points in the last two. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Let it ride. Yeah, I think the Warriors end this tonight, though. I'm sure Lillard's going to have a great game just to close out the season. But, again, with the Warriors and everything that's going on with Kerr, I think they're probably going to want, to have him as much rest as possible. I think they saw the Cavaliers sweep their first-round series. Now they feel like they have to do it. So I'm liking a big performance from these guys tonight.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, give us un momento, and we'll be back with the MLB.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA, weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today using the coupon code podcast on DFSArmy.com to unlock 20% off your monthly subscription and get two free ebooks, as well as the secrets to unlocking a new level to your game.
All right, let us get into this MLB slate. Only 9 games on today's slate, which is hysterical because when we say only 9 games, we think of like an NBA slate with only 9 games. That's still a lot. But for MLB, when, 15 games are usually going on each night, 9 is sort of a breather. So I will welcome that any night. But let us begin in Pittsburgh, where we got the Chicago Cubs at the Pirates. Brett Anderson, the lefty, goes for the Cubs. And Chad Kuhl, the righty, goes for the Pirates. Now, if you remember, The Cubs actually got swept by the Pirates last weekend, I believe. So they're definitely going to be looking for a little bit of revenge here. Brett Anderson, going for the Cubs, 1-1 with a 3.77 ERA in his last three starts against the Pirates. Did get knocked around in his last start against the Brewers, but let's be honest, who hasn't lately? His two starts before that went pretty well, only allowed 8 hits, 5 walks, 1 earned run, and 10 and 2/3 innings. If we're looking at Chad Kuhl, he's actually done pretty good here. His last two starts have been against the Red Sox and the Cardinals. He's done pretty well there, only 3 earned runs and 12 and a third of an inning, 9 strikeouts in that span as well. Did not do well against the Cubs, though, last season. He's 0-2 with a 10.45 ERA in 3 starts against them. Opposing Cubs hitters hit for 404 against him. And then Kuhl had a 2.33 whip, 12 earned runs in those 10 and a third innings. Okay, so given that with those two starters, anything that we should be happy about with them?
No, not really. I guess you could, as the SP2, you could go to Brett Anderson here. This Pirates team is, it's a different team than the team that was in, Chicago, obviously. Loss of Starling Marte is going to hurt a little bit. It's going to hurt a lot of it. And they kind of really haven't figured out exactly, you know, who's going to do a lot of the filling in on, in left field. Of course, you insult Andrew McCutchen by saying he's lost a step and we're going to pull him out of center field and put him in right field, and now look what happens, and you have to put him back in center field. If I'm Andrew McCutchen, I'm holding two middle fingers up to the air and saying, F you.
You know what would be great if Andrew McCutchen did? If he took on that form that he does in that SportsCenter commercial where he comes in with all the mascots and they start stealing all the stuff in the boardroom.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right. He's.
I would like him. I want that Andrew McCutchen.
Well, yeah, because that's the Kutch that, you know, won the MVP. I don't think that Kutch is available anymore, though. Maybe on one of the older versions of MLB The Show, but not in a current version. Unless you're playing on beginner level anyways, so.
Shona?
I don't know. There's some interesting, like, one-off matchups in this game.
Okay.
I don't mind, God, the top three for the Cubs, they all have an ISO over 200 against right-handed pitching.
Yeah. And this hurts your feelings?
Actually, it does. Because I'm sitting here trying to say, okay, well, maybe we can get sneaky by, you know, playing them or fading them. But, I mean, it's the Cubs. Who are we talking about? It's a 9-game slate. People are going to just absolutely just blindly plug them in and stack them. And,
yeah.
I don't know. I might be on a full fade of the Cubs tonight.
All right, let me give you some interesting numbers to think about that with, though. Now, left-handed batters have hit Kuhl much better this season, and that happened also last year, so we may be developing a trend. Anthony Rizzo also comes into this game with a 12-game hitting streak, also 3-game home run streak. Miguel Montero from the left side has been pretty hot lately, 8-for-13 with the homer over his last 5 games. And then Kyle Schwarber, actually, 25 strikeouts in 68 at bats this season. Those 25 strikeouts or the most from any Cubs player so far this season. No current Cub has faced Kuhl more than 7 times over their career, but the collective numbers pretty good for them. 17-for-30, that's a .447 batting average by all these current Cubs against Kuhl. Anthony Rizzo is 4-for-7 with them with the double. He's actually hit for the cycle against Kuhl. This is kind of cool. In those 4 hits, he's got a double triple homer. And single, Jason Hayward is 3-for-5 against him. Javi Baez, 2-for-5 against Kuhl with a double and a homer. Wilson Contreras, 2-for-3 with all singles. So those guys lead the way. But, you certainly want to go with the lefties in this matchup. The numbers have dictated it.
Yeah, there's – I mean, you could go with Chris Bryant still. It doesn't bother me. The problem is that, you know, it's baseball, and their ownership is going to dictate a lot of kind of what happens here. I mean, if you really, really, really want to get down to it, I guess you can play kind of a – you can go with a Ben Zobrist, Addison Russell, Jason Hayward, Wilson Contreras stack, or make sure you get Javier – if Baez is batting in that nine hole, make sure you get him in that four-man stack if you're going to include the top three or four hitters from this club lineup. Try to get creative with it. Don't just blindly plug in the top four or five from this lineup, because it's going to be chalky. It always is. They always carry at least a 15 to 20% ownership rate. Even with Coors on the slate, I mean, and Chase for that matter, you know, don't get cute with it, but don't get so cute to where either fade it or get creative. You know, don't get blindly, you know, chalky with it. So that's my kind of my take with it.
No doubt, no doubt. All right, let's from the Pirates side of things here. Just a couple numbers to look at. Of course, David Freese against left-handed pitching. He likes it. He over his pretty much his whole career, he likes it. And so far this season, 5 for 15 with the homer, 4 RBIs, and 5 walks also against left-handed pitching. So getting on base is no issue for him. Not much history for the Pirates though against Brett Anderson in this one. Collectively, current Pirates are hitting 194 against him. You know, Josh Harrison, Andrew McCutchen, Jordy Mercer, Gregory Polanco have all seen him at least 6 times. Not much success, but Jordy Mercer does have a homer against him, and he's swinging kind of a hot bat now, so he might not be a bad idea. The top three grade DFSA grades for the Pirates today are Jordy Mercer, Josh Harrison, and McCutchen. The projected, you know, from the projected Pirates lineup today, all have fairly decent DFSA grades. And then Jose Ozuna with the 269.46 DFSA grade.
Yeah, he's got
is he
like
gonna
I
hit
think
8 home runs tonight.
I think he's got like 15 at bats. And I mean, when you have a 667 ISO versus right-handed pitching,
yeah,
or left-handed pitching, you know. I think it's a little bit telling. Guys, understand this. I pull stats from 2015 to 2017. We are about to get into that point where I'll just start pulling stats from this year. But they're not there yet. So guys like Trey Mancini, guys like Jose Ozuna, Eric Thames is another one. These guys that have huge, huge, huge ISOs versus the handiness of pitching, understand that there's a little bit of a grain of salt that you have to take with it. I mean, not everybody has a Corey Dickerson-like, you know. exactly. A Corey Dickerson-like 269 ISO versus right-handed pitching. So.
Sheesh. All right. Anything else in this one? We moving?
Yeah, we're moving.
We're mobile. We're mobile, folks. All right. Tampa Bay Rays at the Baltimore Orioles. Chris Archer, the righty, goes for the Rays, while Ubaldo Jimenez, the right-hander, goes for the Orioles. All right. So Chris Archer, off to a pretty decent start, 2-0, 3.20 ERA, 27 strikeouts, and a 1.3 whip in 25 and a third innings so far. The Rays have won all 4 of his starts this season as well. The Orioles, however, have his number. He is 2-5 with a 4.73 ERA against them in his last 10 starts. That includes a 1.44 whip, 31 earned runs, and 12 homers in 59 innings. That is disgusting. Let's talk about Ubaldo. He was magnificent his last time out. 7 2/3, 2 hits, 4 walks, no earned runs, 3 strikeouts, and 14 ground ball outs on 108 pitches. That was at the Great American Ballpark, so that makes all that even more impressive. Pretty good numbers against Tampa Bay in his last 4 starts. He is 2-1 with a 3.62 ERA. Rays are the only team that Ubaldo Jimenez has thrown a complete game against since 2014. The bad about Jimenez, yes, he did have that great start, but his first 2 starts this season, that was at home against the Yankees and at Fenway Park against the Red Sox, those did not go well. He gave up 5 earned runs in 4 1/3 innings in each of those 2 starts. All right. Archer probably going to be the more popular choice in this one, but is he one of the best on the night?
No, because this game might not even play.
Ooh, yes, I forgot to mention that. 65 to 70% chance of light rain throughout the game. Wind is.
I don't care. You talk about
13 miles an hour.
Yeah, I'm not even worried about the wind. You talk about rain and pitchers, and I'm like, yeah, peace out. So I wouldn't mind if you're making multiple lineups to kind of, you know, load up on some bats here. But as far as the pitchers, I mean, we talked about it last time that Ubaldo pitched. You know, this is just one of those. This just felt like one of those nights where Ubaldo just comes out and throws a gem. You know, especially with the way that the baseball season's gone this year, and down is up is down for a lot of people, including myself, and I'm usually one of the more contrarian guys, you know, in the sport. I don't mind going back to the well and loading up against Ubaldo here. You know, usually when I target him, it's, you know, in other parks, not in Baltimore. But you know, Jim Bowden said it this morning on SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio. When Ubaldo's on and when he's pitching good and not walking people, and that splitter's working, he's very, very, very good. The problem is he's got such a herky-jerky, funky delivery, and this is even going back to his days in Colorado, that it's very, very, very hard to consistently repeat from start to start. So he's got to find that groove very, very early, and if he doesn't, he can get hit and hit hard. And usually what happens is he allows a dink here, a dunk there, and a bomb. So, or he walks a guy and then gets hit hard. So, You know, usually early on, whether or not it's going to be a good or bad start from Ubaldo Jimenez. There usually isn't, more times than not, there's not really in between. So I like guys like Corey Dickerson, obviously. Yeah. You know, we talk about Dick Dong all the time. I like guys like Brad Miller. Even though he feels like he's a little uncomfortable at the plate, I'd go back to the well there. Logan Morrison is another one, especially being a left-handed bat in this league or in this ballpark. I know that the wind is blowing in from right field, but I wonder if this is an instance where it creates kind of like a jet stream effect where it hits against the back of that stadium behind home plate and swirls it around and makes the wind go out to left field. We see that in a lot of these stadiums nowadays where the wind kind of comes in from one outfield place and then it swirls and creates a jet stream to where routine fly balls out to the opposite field from where the wind is coming, creates a jet stream, and the ball just kind of flies out of that. That's why one of the biggest areas in Coors Field, and they extended that fence before last season, was the right center field part, was because that there was a jet stream that always came in that just made balls kind of carry out to that side of the park. And it's from where it's from how the stadium's constructed. We've seen that in Texas. We've seen that in San Diego. I have got to do some digging, but I wonder if that's one of the cases. And if that's the case, then I want to see, I'm going to dig and see exactly what type of, the reason I say that is, you know, everybody talks about platoon splits where Corey Dickerson and Kevin Kiermaier, have the platoon advantage. But right. If guys like Evan Longoria and Steven Souza, and Derek Norris are pull hitters that could get it up in that jet stream, it might be a sneaky way to go tonight. You know, and you could go to the other side of it as well, you know, with the Orioles and apply the same theory.
Mm. Yeah, I wish I had all these numbers before, you know, you find out all the win. I mean, you know, we talk about the Rays. You know, they have some just fantastic numbers to dig into here. In Archer's four starts this season, the Rays have scored at least 7 runs 3 times, which is also good. They have the second most runs in the majors with 93. We're talking about Steven Souza, Logan Morrison. These guys are leading the power surge. Sows has got 4 homers and 17 RBIs already. Logan Morrison, 4 homers, 12 RBIs. Sows' peripheral numbers are outstanding. He's leading the Rays in pretty much every category. 347 average, 424 on base, 613 slugging, 1.037 OPS. He's got a 7-game hitting streak right now that he's bringing into Baltimore. So he's a guy that I would certainly have some interest in. You got Brad Miller, Kevin Kiermaier. Both guys have been doing a great job of getting on base over the last 7 games. Brad Miller's got a 433 OBP. Kevin Kiermaier, 423 OBP. And, you know, that's going to work. You talk about righties that could potentially do some damage. Rick Weeks, he's got some pretty good numbers against Ubaldo Jimenez. He's 6-for-13, double, triple, 3 walks. That could all work out. I mean, Logan Morrison also has some great numbers against Jimenez. 5-for-8, 2 doubles and a homer against him. I don't know. I like the Rays, but I think, you know, the weather's going to kind of dictate how this all plays out tonight. If we're talking about Orioles bats, I'm really not excited about a lot. You know, they've kind of been quiet lately. You got, you know, Jonathan Scope, who has 2 homers over the last 6 games. Adam Jones, Machado have homered there, but, you know, averages aren't that great. They're not even getting on base that well.
So, we haven't seen this Orioles offense really, really, really go bonkers yet.
Yeah, and, you know, that kind of gives me a little more interest in Archer. I think, you know, maybe the strikeouts could be something. Obviously, I'm not excited about the park or, you know, the weather for that matter. But, you know, if a couple things clear up later in the day, I wouldn't mind taking a crack at Archer as my pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree. I would much rather attack him with a left-handed
Absolutely.
Pitcher. But, you know, beggars can't be choosers here.
Another one yesterday, Erod.
Yeah, if we're talking about trying to get a low-owned guy to target the struggling, and I say struggling with a grain of salt because, you know, they can explode at any moment. We've seen it. But if we're trying to get creative in tournaments, then, I mean, as long as some of the weather things clear up, I don't see that being a problem.
All right, let's talk about the next game here. We've got the Cincinnati Reds at the Milwaukee Brewers. The Reds throwing out the dazzling young rookie southpaw, Amir Garrett, and the Brewers will welcome Matt Garza back to the team for his start of 2017. Garrett off to a tremendous start, 2-1, 1.83 ERA, 0.86 whip. All of those in pretty tough matchups at St. Louis, at Pittsburgh, versus the Orioles. Yeah, I understand some of those teams aren't great against left-handed pitching. They still have talent, though. The Brewers have never seen Garrett live, so, you know, some of that unknown could work against him, could neutralize some of their best bats, and, you know, having VR from the right side and then the platoon advantage against Thames and Shaw. We're talking about Matt Garza. He's 3-2 with the 3.80 ERA in his last 8 starts against the Reds. He's making his debut this season, coming off a groin injury. The bad news for Garza, he made 2 rehab starts in low A ball before coming back up here to the Brewers. In those 2 rehab starts, he goes 10 2/3 of an inning, gives up 11 hits, 4 walks, 5 earned runs, but he did have 12 strikeouts. Not exactly what you're looking at from a major league pitcher against low A ball hitters.
Yeah, so, but I take that. The only thing I say about that is we don't know what the objective was there. Is it just to get his arm strength up and throw innings and pitches? And he was just throwing fastballs, you know. So, not that Matt Garza is one of those guys that we're going to avoid because of that, but, I mean, I see what you're saying, but I'm not going to take that into consideration at all, just because, you know, we don't know what the objective was with him being down there, so, other than to get his arm strength built up, and he was going to throw innings no matter what, and wasn't really worried and focused on the results.
Gotcha. All right, let's get to the hot topic, the focal matter of the day with Amir Garrett. Grant, this is probably a way that a lot of people are going to go. The Brewers are certainly striking out a great deal already coming into this season. But we got to be honest. I mean, this is one of the better offenses in baseball. They lead the majors with 34 homers. They're also 5th with 15 stolen bases this season so far. I mean, there's a lot to like, but there's also a ton to be scared about.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to jump on the Amir Garrett train tonight. It's not that I don't think he's a good play, but if you're telling me that a rookie pitcher, and we were talking about this before the show, if you're talking about a rookie pitcher being chalk going into Miller Park, against one of the better power offenses so far this season. And I can get him at a lower ownership because of where the pitcher is going to be or who the pitcher is going to be. I'm willing to take a shot.
Yeah, because and you know one of the other things that we talked about, and I think you know you were briefly touching on it here, but you know where we talk about guys like Ryan Braun or you know Eric Thames, guys like that. You know, a lot of people probably aren't going to be going that way because they're going to be rolling with Garrett as their pitcher. Makes sense, duh. But I mean, Braun is one of my favorite plays of the night just because of that. You know, he absolutely crushes left-handed pitching. And, you know, we're going to see Braun at a much lower ownership. Number one, because you're probably going to have a lot of people stacking up on Coors bats. And then number two, which we mentioned a couple times already, Garrett's probably going to be the chalk pitcher of the night. So I think what a great opportunity to get up on Ryan Braun here.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Let's talk about the Reds offense for a second. I mean, any other what am I talking about here? There are some other Brewers bats that I want to bring up here. So we talked about this the last time we had a podcast with the Brewers catchers. Well, they continue to do some damage here. Over the last 6-7 games, all right, we're talking about the Brewers catchers here. Jet Bandy and Manny Pena combined have gone 10 for 26, 4 homers, 6 RBIs, 2 doubles, 2 walks, 5 runs, and only 2 strikeouts. So whoever the Brewers catcher is tonight should be, like, the most amazing person ever.
Yeah, I mean, they've been some of the better dollar-per-point plays at the position this season. We all know that one of the better ways to get some value at, you know, in MLB is to, you know, punt the catcher position. I mean, I've been playing Brewers catchers almost all season, and it's been profitable, so.
Yeah, you got Jet Bandy at 2,800 and Manny Pena at 2,400. So I think either guy going to be a fantastic option. And just like we were talking about with Ryan Braun, you know, if a lot of people are going Garrett, they're probably not going to be going with these Brewers catchers. So whoever it is, you should probably lock and load them.
Yep.
All right. Reds offense, they are no slouch either. So just as I was saying with where we have the Brewers who are first in homers and fifth in steals – well, let's do a little switcheroo-ski, Keith, because the Reds lead the league in steals and they're fifth in homers. How do you like them apples? You know, notable BVP numbers here against Matt Garza. You got Joey Votto and Eugenio Suarez. You know, Votto has seen him 34 times. Suarez has only seen him 9 times. But I want to talk about what they've done over the last couple of games more so. Votto, 3 homers, 9 RBIs, 4 walks, 6 runs in the last 6 games. Eugenio Suarez has been there right behind him. He's been 7 for his last 18 with 2 homers, 4 RBIs, 4 walks, and 5 runs in the last couple of games. You know, obviously, this is probably where you want to look. And then other people, you know, with Billy Hamilton, Jose Peraza, guys like that. So, you can't go wrong with these fellas either.
Yeah, if you're playing a Red stack, you need to have one of those two in your lineups because of the fact that they steal bases, and stolen bases are a great way to get away from the crowd. It's something that a lot of people target, and I believe that's wrong. I mean, stolen bases are, if you can get the right guy, they're worth some points. So basically, every time that you're talking about one of these two getting on base, if they get on base with a single, that's, you know, on FanDuel, that's 3 points. And then a stolen base is 6 points. So you're talking basically like they got a triple and only got 2 bases. So, you've got to add that in. And I think that is a way that you have to do it. I like the 2-3-4-5 stack. If Eugenio Suarez is in that 5 hole again, with Duvall, Votto, Peraza, and Suarez, but I wouldn't be mad at you for going with a 1-3-4-5 or a 1-2-3-4 or you know something like that either. So,
You better not get mad at me, Keith. All right, let's talk about the next one here. Minnesota Twins at the Texas Rangers. Twins throwing out righty Phil Hughes. Rangers throwing out lefty Martin Perez. Hughes got knocked around his last two starts. Not the easiest matchups at Detroit, at home against Cleveland. In nine innings, he gave up 8 earned runs and 3 homers. In his last three starts against the Rangers, he's 0-1 with a 4.79 ERA. Opposing Rangers hitters are hitting 341 off him, and he's allowed 11 earned runs in those 20 and two-thirds innings. Martin Perez, not much to really get to him with. Yeah, he's faced the Twins once since 2014. It was a decent start. I'm not even going to throw out the stats. He got a no decision in it. Just your average start. So far this season, 1-2, 3.60 ERA. 1.85 whip in 20 innings is a bit concerning. He has given up at least 6 hits in each start and at least 3 walks in 3 of his 4 starts. Probably going to go to either pitcher, safe to say, yeah?
I actually have a little bit of interest in Martin Perez here.
Oh, you tell us why.
He generally, if I'm not mistaken, he performs pretty well at home. And he, look, I don't know why, call it a gut feeling, but, he's not somebody that I really want to target, unless it's just like a, kind of like a mini stack. He's got a low K percentage. He's got a higher walk percentage. I understand all the numbers kind of, go away from it, except for the 54% ground ball percentage and the 25.1% fly ball percentage. Those are two of the, that's the second highest ground ball percentage and one of the lower fly ball percentages on the slate. And he's got one of the lower hard contact rates on the slate as well. So, I don't know, as an SP2 on DraftKings, if you're wanting to fit some Coors bats in there, then I don't mind that.
All right. The one thing with Perez that I guess does impress me, he doesn't really give up the long ball that much, and that's pretty much all that the Twins do.
That's another reason.
You got guys like and here's the other thing, too. The Twins really haven't seen much of Perez. I mentioned that a little bit. Current Twins in their lineup are 6-34 against him. You got Robbie Grossman, Brian Dozier, Jason Castro. You know, they've all seen him at least 5 times, but that's really it from this Twins team. The one guy I'd be a little worried about in the Twins lineup right now, Eddie Rosario. He is their hottest hitter right now. 8 for his last 22, 2 homers, 5 ribbies, 3 runs over the last 6 games. Other than that, though, you know, not really much to get all giddy about. And then we talk about the Rangers, who, yeah, they have 28 homers this season, ranks in 3rd in the league. But, you know, not many of their guys are really crushing it right now. Joey Gallo is their big guy, 5-22, 4 homers, 7 runs over the last 7 games. Other than that, you know, their guys really aren't swinging the bats that well either. So you might have a little something there with the Martin Perez, maybe getting a quality start, you know, keeping these Twins at bay. But I would assume that's more of a, you know, SP2 sort of play.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Anything else you want to add here?
Don't sleep on Jonathan Lucroy.
Okay.
I know he hasn't been playing well this season. He hasn't been hitting well this season so far, but he still does have pretty good numbers, even if it is against right-handed pitching. The power's not usually there, but all the other peripherals are. So as a cheaper, you know, catcher play on FanDuel, don't sleep on him tonight.
All right, let's talk about the Kansas City Royals at the White Sox. Jason Vargas, the lefty, going for them. Miguel Gonzalez, the righty, going for the White Sox. Now, Jason Vargas is off to one of the best starts in the majors this season. 3-0, microscopic .44 ERA, the whip at .77 as well. You know, now that we look at some of these teams that he's faced, he's pitched at the Astros, at home against the A's, and against the Giants. Maybe that's got a little bit to do with it. But he does have a nice history against the White Sox here, 4-1, 2.27 ERA in his last 8 starts. That all works very well. Now, Miguel Gonzalez, he's coming off one of his better starts. That one was at the Yankees. He went 8 and a third. Four hits, a walk, one earned run, four strikeouts. If you remember, that was the night that he opposed Severino. Then he went for his big outing there. The one thing that works out well for Gonzalez, the Royals have the lowest batting average and on-base percentage in the majors right now. So that could certainly come into play. With Vargas, we saw, he's been great, but we did see this White Sox team break out of their slump yesterday. Hopefully that was more of a momentary thing, because I do like Vargas in this matchup.
Of course, you and everybody else is going to. I don't know what to do with this yet. Just because I haven't looked at Vargas's numbers deep enough to say I'm buying in. Part of me wants to. The other part of me is throwing up red flags and saying, hold your horses. I don't know. Just because Jason Vargas doesn't seem to me as that dominant type of pitcher. I know all the peripheral stats are there. I know what the numbers are saying on the outside, but I want to see. There's a little bit there as far as the opponents that he's faced, but there's also a little bit there as far as possibly maybe even being one of those guys that is due for some big time regression.
Yeah, you know what's funny too? It's not just been Vargas from that Royals rotation that's been crushing it. It's been all of them. Danny Duffy has even done pretty well. Some of the other guys too that I'm just drawing a blank on their names. But
the problem is can they get to Miguel Gonzalez enough for Vargas to get the win?
Very true. I wanted to ask you about this too. I've kind of noticed here, like even yesterday, I had Mike Foltynewicz, who goes for 49 points, doesn't get the win. I'm not really placing as much of an emphasis on the win anymore as I used to, just on FanDuel. Because with those 6 points, of course they're going to help. No shit. But I'm more interested in my pitcher just actually pitching well. Like in the past, I would go gung-ho and make sure that my guy was getting the win. I'm not as worried about that anymore. Agree or disagree?
I agree to a point. You can't – I like what FanDuel has done as far as adding the ability to get a quality start in there and de-emphasizing the win. I wish they'd just take the wins out completely, because I think it's a complete luck stat, and your pitcher has no control over it. But if DraftKings is going to have the bonuses for other luck stats in there, then I mean, I guess that you could throw that in there as well. So I don't mind it. I still want to try to target guys that are going to get the win, if at all possible, because I believe that if you target guys that are going to get the win, then you can get guys that are going to also get the quality start in there as well. I'd be interested to see how many quality starts turn into wins.
That's a great one. Yep.
I'd like to see a percentage on that one, because that might give us a little bit of advantage, because if like 65 to 70% of quality starts turn into wins, and I'm throwing an arbitrary number out there, don't think that that's the number, then I really, really, really would be more inclined to start, saying forget the win, or I would be more inclined to start targeting, like we used to last year, guys that are in line to get the wins. This White Sox offense is they're not as bad as they were before yesterday, but I don't think they're as good as they are, as they showed they could be yesterday. I think in certain matchups they can be, but I'm not sure if this is that matchup. If you just look at the DFSA grades for pitchers, Jason Vargas is ranked number 4. But, I mean, that's kind of telling. The only problem I have is that he's got one of the lower swinging strike rates and K rates on the season, and this team doesn't strike out a lot.
I mean, look, all your worries are certainly validated there. And, you know, Vargas is a guy that's coming into this season who, you know, we really didn't give two shits about. And, you know, here he is popping off with some big performances. I do think who he's faced so far has a lot to do with it. And, you know, you're going to look tonight. And I don't think the White Sox have really taken on too many lefties this year, if I'm not mistaken.
They have a 16.9 swing or a strikeout rate versus left-handed pitching. That's one of the lower ones on the slate. Now, the issue is you're right. Vargas has not faced a good quality opponent this year, but it's not like the White Sox are a good quality opponent either.
Right.
So I'm very, very skeptical on, because the numbers are saying yes, Vargas is a good play. But there's also certain numbers in there that are saying, you know, wait a second here, he's not. Because he's got a very, very low ground ball rate. He's got an extremely high fly ball rate. He's got a low K percentage against a team that does not K a lot versus left-handed pitching. Now, that could be because they haven't faced a lot of left-handed pitching, but still. And if you just look at his ERA, yes, over, it's a 3.43 the last, since 2014, okay? And that includes this year's stats. But his Sierra is a 4.07. I mean, that's a half a run difference, and I don't know, there's a lot to like about him, but there's also merit into saying, okay, maybe not play White Sox, but maybe not load up as much on Vargas as the field is going to.
No, that is fair. As you were talking, I was trying to go in and take a look and see exactly what the White Sox have done against left-handed pitching. And yeah, they have the third fewest at bats in the majors, fewest in the American League against left-handed pitching, which is amazing. Now we'll see the Washington Nationals tonight up against a lefty. They have by far the fewest against left-handed pitching, with 52 at bats, and then you got the Atlanta Braves with 85 at bats, and then the White Sox there at 110 against left-handed pitching. So
yeah, see, it's.
A far cry from, like, for all the teams in your division, like the Dodgers, Giants, and Rockies, they have the most at-bats against left-handed pitching.
And that makes sense considering how many, you know, not only left-handers, but how many quality left-handers there are in the National League West. So,
right.
Like I said, there's a lot to like about Jason Vargas, but there's a lot to that says, okay, let's hold our horses a little bit.
Indeed. All right. Moving? Mobile?
Yeah, mobile.
Well, all right, let's go. That we were just talking about. Washington Nationals at the Colorado Rockies. Jacob Turner, the Rook, goes up against Tyler Anderson, the left-hander here from the Rockies. And if I'm not mistaken, this is Turner's first Major League start?
First Major League start this year.
This year? Okay.
Or maybe really... first Major League start completely. I know he's he's started before.
He's started? All right. I had a... When I finished the notes yesterday is when I found out that he was starting, and I forgot to go back and change it. My mistake. But anywho, let's talk about Tyler Anderson here on the mound for the Rockies. He's never faced the Nationals before, so there is the element of the unknown. And I'm glad that we're starting to finally – some of our smarts are starting to rub off on some of our subscribers, because before we even started the podcast, before we even – mentioned anything in the channel today, we've had three people so far mention this fact that the Nationals just played the Sunday night ESPN game. So that means they finished up last night, probably about 11:30, whatever, did not take off until very late. They'll be flying into Denver, which we know has the 45-minute bus trip from the airport into downtown Denver. We discussed this many a times throughout the NBA season. So we've got that, which could actually work out very well to Anderson's benefit. Now, he is going to have the platoon advantage against guys like Adam Eaton, Bryce Harper, and Daniel Murphy. And we just mentioned it, that the Nationals have only faced – let's see. They only have 52 at-bats against left-handed pitching this season. And They have 21 hits in that stretch. So that's not very good. But the fact that Tyler Anderson going here, I've seen him projected quite highly on a number of different places, including the DFSA grade, which gives him the highest of any pitcher tonight. The one thing, though, that we have to worry about is it has been a rough start for Tyler Anderson so far this season. He is 1-3 with a 7.32 ERA, 1.58 whip, and he has not made it to the sixth inning of any start this season.
No, he's made it into the sixth inning. He just hasn't. Yeah, he hasn't made it out of.
All right, so defend your boy here. What's so good about him tonight?
Well, they went back and they're changing something with his delivery, getting him more upright, like he was last year, rather than what he started. I guess his stride was a little off. So I mean that means nothing to DFS players, except for the fact that he's trying to get back to what made him so successful last season. The issue I have is that I don't know if it's going to take effect yet or not. We saw it take an immediate effect with Kyle Freeland yesterday. He pitched an absolutely phenomenal game. Yes, it's against the Giants, which aren't a great, you know, offensive team right now. They're really, really beat up. But you still got guys like Buster Posey in there and Hunter Pence, who absolutely crush Rockies pitching. And they weren't able to do that this last series. So that's something to kind of take into effect. I like the idea of kind of hedging myself here. I'm going to have some Tyler Anderson tonight. But I'm also going to have some Washington National stacks just in case. Now, the issue I have is the fact that this Rockies bullpen is not only well rested, but whenever they get into neutral and positive situations, they are one of the best in the National League. I'm not playing a lot of Washington National bats tonight. Not as one-offs, not as stacks. I'll have my one or two hedge teams because, you know, this is Coors and anything can happen. And I want to make sure that if Tyler Anderson hasn't fixed his delivery yet, that I'm still live. But, you know, it's one of those situations where on the vast majority of my teams, I will not have any Nationals exposure as far as bats because of everything that we just talked about. One, you know, the ESPN game late, coming into Denver, getting used to the altitude, all of these things come into play. That and the fact that you add, you know, Tyler Anderson, and some of the statistics are really glaring. Yes, look, he's got a 318 BABIP in his major league starts. A lot of that has to do with Coors Field because of the way that the outfield has to play because of the amount of ground that they have to cover. You know, he's got his Sierra shows that he's due for some positive regression. He's got a 4.10 career ERA and his Sierra's a 3.90. He's got one of the better swinging strike rates on the night. He's got the second highest soft contact rate. One of the lowest on tonight's slate, yes. One of the lowest hard contact rates. One of the highest ground ball rates. I mean, everything except for, like, I think if this wasn't Washington coming in, that he would by far and away be one of the better tournament options of the night. Now, I still think he is a very good one. But his recent performances, because of what the Rockies have said that they are doing with his delivery, trying to get him not to stride as far and be more upright and work downhill, I think that is making him go a little bit overlooked. That and the fact that he's pitching in Denver. But, you know, yeah. Before this year, you know, last year, towards the end of last year, we were playing guys like John Gray and Tyler Anderson in Denver because they had performed so well. Like, yeah. This starting rotation right now is not afraid to pitch in Coors Field. This bullpen is not afraid to pitch in Coors Field. And I love that attitude about them, because they're like, you know what, whatever, I'm going to – I love that attitude about them, and it makes for great tournament plays. Yeah, there's a little bit of homerism in there because I've watched Tyler Anderson ever since he was with Double A Tulsa. But, I mean, it's not like he's not a bad pitcher. He's a little off right now, but, you know, we said that about Kyle Freeland, too, before yesterday. And he comes out and throws 7 shutout innings against the Giants, which, say what you want, that's still a offense in Coors Field. So...
Now, 2 questions here. 1, I wanted to ask with the DFSA grade. Because he's got, like, overwhelmingly the highest grade of any pitcher tonight. Now, does that take into account how great of a value that he is?
No.
No? Okay.
No, that does not take into account price or ballpark. When we talk about pitchers as far as DFSA grades, it takes into account the opponent. It takes more into account the pitcher's talent. Takes into account Sierra, WHIP, BABIP, K percentage, all the statistics that are listed on the starting pitcher hub. It takes into account every single one of those, except for the innings pitched and the earned runs, because it and the ERA, because it takes into account the Sierra, where I believe Sierra is more of a indication of true talent rather than, you know, ERA is, because ERA can be an unlucky stat because of, you know, defensive shifts and stuff like that. Yeah. So it takes into account the talent of the pitcher, not anything as far as daily fantasy related. I don't know. It's very, very, very difficult to – I expect Tyler Anderson to have a good start.
Right.
And I don't think today is the day to load up on Washington National bats, and I think we can gain an advantage on the field in that one. In this game. So
absolutely. And you know, another point to, you know, Washington having to travel and, you know, all the hectic circumstances that they have, you know, the Rockies have been here for what, a couple days? You know,
yeah,
granted
since
it's
Thursday.
Their home, but they didn't have to, you know, make that ridiculous airport to downtown trip either. So, you know, they've just been chilling in Denver. Cool. And they did not have to play a late game either. So they'll be just fine for tonight. All right, let's talk about bats. Now, we'll start with the Rockies. Charlie Blackmon, Nolan Arenado, Trevor Story have all homered multiple times and scored at least 5 runs over the last 5 games. Blackmon has especially been productive. He's got an 8-game hitting streak, and he's also got at least 1 hit in 13 of the last 14 games. I mean, we could take a look
at... And
led off the last 2 games with a triple. He has been on fire lately. Some of the peripherals that go into those stats within the 8-game hitting streak and the 13 and the 14 have been absolutely fantastic as well. I was absolutely loving him because I got the late news about Ross as well last night too, but Ross has just been an absolute gas can against left-handed bats. But, I mean, I think he's still fine here against Turner.
Yeah, I don't have any problems with that. Guys that we need to pay attention to on tonight's slate for the Rockies are guys like Mark Reynolds, DJ LeMahieu. Mark Reynolds has been absolutely completely on fire. And he's by far, you know, outside of Tony Walters and Gerardo Parra, he's the cheapest guy that you can get. I don't mind like a stack to the bottom part of the order in this lineup. I mean, Mark Reynolds has been so hot that they're talking about when Ian Desmond gets healthy, putting him in the outfield in left field and letting Mark Reynolds continue to play every day. They're going to have a real, real big issue coming up whenever David Dahl gets healthy. And, you know, you've got David Dahl, Gerardo Parra, who's been playing well, Ian Desmond and Mark Reynolds. I mean, it's a good problem to have, don't get me wrong. Yeah. But, you know, I would – don't mistake. We signed Ian Desmond to play first base, and we signed Ian Desmond to play every day. If Ian Desmond's healthy, and he's starting to take cuts off the tee, so it's coming up. When Ian Desmond gets healthy, he's going to play. Where, I don't know. But he's going to play.
Yeah, that's a great problem to have. I, you know, Daniel Nava is like my problem to have. That's not a good one, but heck, what are you going to do? Let's see. Yeah. All right, with the Nationals, you know, obviously their numbers are ridiculous. I got to run them down because I wrote them down. Ha! They have the second most runs of 93 in MLB this season. Bryce Harper, league-leading .400 batting average. He's second in both homers and RBIs in the last six games. He's 11 for 20 with three homers, seven RBIs, four doubles, seven walks, and 10 runs. Not too shabby, Mr. Harper. And if that wasn't enough, 8 for 11 with three doubles and three walks against left-handed pitching this season. Ryan Zimmerman, second in the league with a .387 batting average. In the last six games, he's 10 for 20, three homers, 10 RBIs, two doubles, three walks, four runs, and a partridge in a pear tree. Now, we were, you know, basically lighting the sky in Tyler Anderson's name. But, you know, again, those are probably just even more reasons that he'll be a lot lower owned tonight.
Yeah, exactly.
That travel is still one hell of a bitch, so keep that in mind. All right, let us get to another very good offensive night, which we should see tonight here with the San Diego Padres at the Arizona Diamondbacks. Julius, I still
can't Yolis.
Yolis Chassie, the righty, goes up against Zach Greinke, the righty. These two just faced off against each other last week, and it was an absolute pitcher's duel. So you know we got to see the exact opposite in this one. This game is going to have the warmest temperatures of the night, 80, 90 degrees, and the wind is blowing out 10 to 15 miles an hour throughout the game tonight. Let's see. In that same matchup last week, Chassie pitched eight innings, only gave up three hits and a walk, no earned runs with five Ks. Zach Greinke did just as good. He went eight innings, gave up five hits, a walk, gave up one earned run. It was a homer, and he did have six strikeouts in that one. No surprise, that was a 1-0 game. If we look at Chassie early, now I know, you know, it's way too early to take anything into consideration, but his home road splits are ridiculous so far this season. At home, he's 2-0, hasn't given up an earned run, 0.55 whip, and the opposing batting average is 122. On the road, however, things have been much different. He's 0-2, 12.96 ERA, 2.65 whip, and the opposing batting average is 421. Okay, that's good to know. Greinke, I really don't have any minuses for him, so let's just let's talk about the pitchers here.
Yeah, I like Zach Greinke tonight in tournaments. You know, he's got a couple guys that he's going to have to watch out for, mainly Ryan Shemp, Yangarvis Solarte, Will Myers. But it's not like, you know, before last year, Zach Greinke actually performed pretty well in Arizona as a member of the Dodgers. I don't see, like, there isn't a huge difference as far as what has taken place, other than, you know, we can say that he was off last year. He's lost some velocity, but he's had some mixed performances this year. He hasn't been as bad as he was last year, but he hasn't been as great as he was with the Dodgers, obviously. So it's not like he's going to have a breeze through this lineup. He's going to have a couple guys where he's going to have to be careful of. Chassie pitched really well last game. I don't see him performing or, you know, duplicating that performance tonight. Uh-huh. And I think that a lot of people are going to, because the sites don't dynamic price for Arizona like they do for Colorado, when both of these teams are at home and on the same slate, a lot of people will fade Denver to go to Arizona. You know, because, I mean, come on, you can get David Peralta in a great matchup for $3,000.
Right.
I mean, are you gonna go David Peralta or Charlie Blackmon? I mean, in my opinion, Charlie Blackman's a better play, but if you look at their numbers, they're pretty close. I mean, you got a 372 WOBA versus a 370 for Charlie Blackmon. They both have a 205 ISO. David Peralta's 132 WRC plus is a little bit higher than Charlie Blackmon's 117. But you look at the DFSA grade, and you're talking about basically a 54 versus a 48. But where you go to the pricing, that's where the difference takes in. You're talking about a $1,500 discount for David Peralta. I mean, in cash games, yeah, absolutely. You're going to go to David Peralta over Charlie Blackmon. But still, it's in tournaments, when you're talking about baseball and ownership, and a lot of guys are going to go, even though Jacob Turner is the guy that's throwing in for Washington, and that this is slated to be a bullpen game for the Nationals, it's not like Chacín is good anymore. You know, he used to be, but he's had shoulder issues. He's had to work his way back into the majors. I think a lot of people are going to say, okay, I can go to Coors and have to pump pitching a little bit, or I can go to Denver, or I mean, I can go to Arizona and not have to punt pitching as much and get just as good of a matchup. And it's baseball, so it could work out, but it's also baseball and it could fall flat in your face.
Yeah, that was a great way to put it. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, look, those split. Hey, look, the guy obviously does not like sleeping in his own bed. Or the guy obviously likes sleeping in his own bed. That is where I was going with that. But yeah, look, there's plenty, certainly plenty to like with these matchups with the bats here for the Diamondbacks. You know what? I'm just going to be a real cavalier son of a bitch, and I'm going to have exposure to both Denver and Chase. So how you like them apples?
I mean, that's the way that I would go. If I'm building 4v4 stacks on FanDuel, and I'll be building a lot of them tonight, hopefully, it's going to be focused around Colorado Rockies and Arizona Diamondbacks.
Indeed. All right, well, let's talk about some of these Diamondbacks, because this is an incredible number right here. AJ Pollock and David Peralta are both 14 for 27 in their last six games. That's ridiculous. Yasmani Tomas, he's got 3 homers and 8 RBIs over the last week, while Jake Lamb has 2 homers and 7 RBIs in the same span. Paul Goldschmidt rode into the weekend on a major funk, but did go 4 for 11 against the Dodgers in that 3-game series. He had a homer, 6 ribs, 3 walks, and 4 runs there.
And something else to point out with Paul Goldschmidt is he steals bases, too.
Yeah.
Like, this Diamondbacks team is actually, I don't know their stats, but I do know that they're running a little bit more than they were last year. And that has a lot to do with the fact that Pollock and Peralta are both healthy at the top of that lineup. But Paul Goldschmidt does steal bases. So you're getting a lot more value out of the $4,300 that you're spending on FanDuel for Paul Goldschmidt than just, you know, the power numbers that he can put up. You know, now, does he steal bases? No, but you know that if he, you know, just singles and doubles, or just gets a couple singles, you know, that there's a possibility that he could get stolen bases in there as well. So
indeed. One thing I wanted to bring up, Diamondbacks have a major league best 8-2 record at home this season. Good cooking for the sticks. And they also lead the league in hits with 183 and runs with 105. So we should see a lot more of that, not only tonight, but in the rest of the series against the Padres.
Yeah, absolutely.
For the Padres, let's see here. We've had right-handers have had a little more success against Greinke than left-handers this season. 293 is the average that righties are hitting against Greinke. Lefties, 231. Some of those power numbers are better from the left-hand side of things, so, you know, don't over compensate for that. Manuel Margot, Yonjervis Solarte both have an OBP of 370 over the last 7 games, so you keep that in mind. Austin Hedges is an interesting guy to talk about here. We were talking about the great hitting techniques from the catchers of the Brewers. Well, Austin Hedges is 2-for-6 against Greinke. Homered against him last start that Greinke and Chacin went head to head. But Hedges also has 4 homers in his last 23 plate appearances. So keep that in mind with him too.
Yeah, he's seeing the ball really well.
Some of the BVP numbers for some of these better hitters of the Padres aren't that great. Will Myers, 4-for-26 with 6 strikeouts against Greinke, and Jervis Solarte, 3-for-21, 3 strikeouts against Greinke, and Travis Jankowski, 3-for-13 with 4 strikeouts. So that's what I got there. Anything from the Padres side of things? I talked a little bit at the beginning about who Greinke should avoid, but...
Yeah, well, not really avoid, but just be careful with. Yeah, I mean, you've got Myers, Solarte. Like you said, Austin Hedges has been seeing the ball really well. Although, if I'm going catcher at 2,800, I'd much rather go to Jonathan Lucroy or one of the Brewers catchers. The Brewers brothers, there you go. Ryan Schimpf, Hunter Renfro are both in play for me as well, so.
All right, 2 more games left to get to. Let's knock them out. We got the Toronto Blue Jays at the Los Angeles Angels. Francisco Liriano, the lefty, going for the Jays, and a switch up in things for the Angels, as it'll be Jesse Chavez going over Ricky Nolasco. That's supposed to go for them. Liriano bounced back in a huge way after only allowing or after lasting only 1 out in his 2017 debut. Although he has not done very well against the Angels, 0-2 with a 7.71 ERA in his last 2 starts against them. Peripherals were not good either. Chavez, he's put up 2 decent starts and 3 tries this season. He actually pitched 1 inning of relief in the first game of this series, and it did not go well for him. He only lasted an inning, but he gave up 4 hits, 3 earned runs, 2 walks. And I believe one of those homers was to the oh-so-struggling Jose Bautista. So that's how bad it was. Any interest in either guy here?
I'd have a lot more interest in Francisco Liriano if the freaking Blue Jays bats weren't so bad. So probably not. Liriano's a guy that's, you know, I guess when he was chalk and he blew up and only threw like a third of an inning, people were burned off of him. I've played him his last 2 starts. He's been under 2% owned both starts, and both starts has just absolutely just, you know, gone bananas. Besides that one bad start that he had against Tampa, he hasn't, or was it Tampa? Or was it the Yankees? I don't know.
Liriano, Tampa. Yeah.
Okay, so besides that one bad start he had against Tampa, he's been pretty good this season.
Yeah.
The problem is that they can't freaking score runs to get him anywhere going. So I probably won't have a lot of exposure to him. I might have him as like an SP2 on DK, depending on what his price is. For the Angels, it's your normal bats. It's, you know, Marte, it's Trout, it's Pujols, it's Calhoun, it's Escobar. That's probably, you know, Danny Espinosa. He's got a 200 ISO versus left-handed pitching over the last couple years. So I don't mind him as a one-off shortstop play or second base play, whichever site you're using him on. He's definitely there's not a lot to love out of this game, but it's not like I'm avoiding it because of, being scared. It's just there's other places I like a little bit more.
Yeah. You know, Chavez probably wouldn't be a terrible option tonight for a pitcher maybe on like FanDuel or an SP2. But again, since he pitched the first inning or he pitched an inning in that first game of this series, I don't really see him. I think like his max would probably be 5 innings. So that part of it definitely scares me. Liriano, again, you know, the numbers aren't great against the Angels, but, you know, some of these BVP numbers are pretty damn good. He's held Mike Trout 5-for-13, you know, not great, but they've all been singles that Trout has gotten off him. Pujols, 3-for-20 against Liriano. Yunel Escobar, 2-for-16. Angelton Simmons, 2-for-9, all singles. So that part is exciting, but, you know, at the same time, I do worry about, you know, the support that he'll get, and not necessarily for the win, as I talked about earlier, where, you know, I'm not going gung-ho over wins, but I just, you know, I think that that could kind of get to a pitcher at some point, you know, where he might try to overpitch. And look, we have seen Lariano be, you know, incredibly wild at times too, so certainly not, you know, not the most confidence that I have in him, but again, not many to choose from on tonight's slate, especially if you want to get crazy with the bats. So
exactly.
We got that. All right. With the Angels, just a couple notes. Mike Trout, who I just talked about, 5-13 career off Lariano with all singles. He is 12 for his last 28, two homers, three doubles, two stolen bases over the last seven games, just doing Mike Trout things. I wanted to add this side note because I was looking at something yesterday and it popped up. Did you know that in Trout's rookie season, he led the AL in runs and he didn't even get called up until the end of April?
Yep.
That is bananas. I did not even see that until last night, but yep. Good to know. So, yeah, Albert Pujols, Angelton Simmons, Martin Maldonado, guys like that, they've all been swinging the bats pretty decently over the last week. But, again, nothing that I'm going to go gung-ho with over Lariano unless you're trying to get a bunch of walks.
Exactly.
All right. We're all done here, correct?
We got one more game.
No, right. That's what I meant. We're done in that one.
Oh, yes.
We're not done in the state of California, though, my friends. We got one of the best rivalries in baseball, the L.A. Dodgers at the San Francisco Giants. Hyunjin Ryu, the lefty for the Dodgers. Matt Cain, the righty. The good part about Ryu is that he's got 17 Ks and 15 and a third innings this season. But the bad news, no quality starts in that span. 0-3, 5.87 ERA, 1.50 whip. He has also allowed six homers in 15 and a third innings. Good thing he's facing the Giants because they can't do shit. Matt Cain, I mean, he's shown glimpses of his former self over the last two starts. He's only allowed two earned runs in 12 innings. Also, nine strikeouts, which isn't too bad, but he's kind of been battling through it. In those 12 innings, he has allowed nine hits and five walks. Of either pitcher, I know the answer to the question, but I have to ask it anyway. Any interest?
No.
Okay, great. Wonderful.
Not with Vegas having this total in AT&T Park at an 8.
No. Oh, goodness gracious. That's yes. Interesting. I did not even see that. All right, well, let's talk about the hits then, or the hitters. Probably going to have more Dodgers exposure here, but I did not find too many nuggets of greatness here. Number one, Dodgers. I'm going to take their offense from the last three games with a grain of salt since they were in Arizona. And then the Giants have just sucked at every state, every ballpark, everywhere of late. Joe Panic, though, he's 7-for-17 over the last five games, getting on base half the time, which is a good sign. But, you know, Hunter Pence, Brandon Belt, they've been getting on base too, but you know, if we're talking about best in baseball, it's certainly not them.
No, they're beat up too. They lost Denard Span over the weekend in Colorado. Of course, their left field, they're so beat up that they put Brandon Belt in left field to start the game yesterday. Yes. Hundley behind the plate and Posey at first base. Don't be surprised if you see that again. Now there's a possibility that they could also stick Chris Marrero out in left and Gorkys Hernandez out in center. Yeah. So, I mean, there's no telling exactly how Bruce Bochy is going to devise this lineup, but this is one of those situations where, you know, I throw kind of record out the window because these guys are pretty much rivals. You're right. I kind of have a little bit more interest in Dodgers bats than I do, you know, San Francisco Giants.
Gorkys Hernandez. That's just a funny name. Yeah, you would probably expect to see him leading off tonight, right? Just going up against the lefty and given, you know, Span being out of the lineup, I would say that that's probably one of the more confident.
Well, you would have thought that, but they had Eduardo Nunez leading off yesterday against the lefty.
Good point. All right. Well, he should be in the lineup then.
Anyway. Oh yeah, he'll be more than likely he'll be in the lineup. But
all right. Yeah, and Nunez becomes incredibly interesting there if he's going to be leading off. I love Nunez. Had him opening day. He won me shit tons of money. So, you know, we got history.
Yep. The issue is that Matt Cain has shown a little bit of competency on the mound this season. Other than that first start, he's been, I don't want to say good, but he's been better. He hasn't been a total gas can. I'm still leaning more towards guys like Jock Peterson, Corey Seager. Probably Yasmani Grandal from the left side. Problem is there's not, unless they go opposite or unless they go Oppo Taco on us, there's not a lot of power potential here, because the left hand, it's very, very difficult to hit the ball out of AT&T as a left-hander. So
yep,
I mean, you've got to yank the ball down the line. So
well, if and, you get one of those funny hops off that gigantic wall out there, like
well, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that it's not it's not possible. But I'm just saying to hit the ball out of the ballpark, unless they go center or oppo, you know, they've got to really yank it. And the guys that I only, the only guys I really see that have that kind of power, you know, are Jock Peterson and maybe a Grandal. But I mean, even he's not somebody that I would put up there as far as really, really, really being able to hit, yank the ball and hit it out of that ballpark. Don't sleep on the right-handed bats, though, either. Guys like Puig, Turner, they usually do have some success against the Dodgers, so they're not completely off the table just because of platoons.
All right. Let's put a cap on this son bitch. Any Don calls that you foresee this evening?
Outside of Coors, no, not really. I didn't really even try to. I mean, I can't really even say yay or nay on that just because of the fact that I didn't look. So.
All right. Well, if I, you know, let me take the lead on this one here. We're talking about Don calls, of course. I'm going to go Charlie Blackman at Coors. I like that one a lot. And then, oh boy, we can get all sorts of crazy. I like Ryan Braun tonight against Amir Garrett. I like that one very much so.
Okay.
I've brought it up multiple times, but let's do it again. All right, folks, if you're not joined up with us yet, make sure you do so. DFSArmy.com. Use that promo code podcast. You can pick from the monthly or the yearly subscription that we got on there. Great deal. Either way, very cheap for what you get in terms of content and just interaction with me, Keith, Kevin, Taco Chop, Bernsey, David, Alvarez, all the guys that are out there. So, you know, even if the pros aren't in there, you got plenty of other guys who have learned from some of us pros and turned that into great information. By the way, great job by everyone calling out the Nationals travel itinerary for tonight. That's just, that makes me so proud as a podcast host.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, great. All right, we will be back with another one for you guys tomorrow. And just good luck tonight, everyone. Cash out, ball outrageous. We go. Peace.
Peace out.